turning. I appreciate it. I hope everybody enjoyed the break, and it's clear that lots of people had a chance to greet each other, which wasn't possible this morning. So that's a big part of why we come together, and I appreciate that. I think we'll return to the agenda now, and Edward, maybe you can.
You bet. Vice President Rao, I believe you're ready to make a presentation. Welcome to the podium, up here where it's tough to see the screen.
Thank you, Trustee McMillan. Can I have the first slide, please? As Vice President Noor just stated a short while ago, we have a mounting state cash crisis. And while as of today we received another $48 million, as of December 31st, we had only gotten $46 million compared to last year when we had gotten about five times as much. So where does the state money go? Walt showed you this in a different format. And state and tuition are the heart of the educational enterprise. They're the heart. State and tuition fees provide the bulk of the resources for our instructional support. Our other sources of funds, like research, auxiliaries, hospital and other medical public service, are all under restricted funds. They're non-state support, and therefore they cannot really be used for instructional support. Therefore, when the state funding suffers, it puts a strain on the instructional mission, and the state and tuition are the heart of the instructional support, and therefore our heart begins to suffer. So as an overview of how we've been dealing with this state financial crisis, as Walt mentioned to you, our early warning started even in 2008, but certainly in 2009, when the payment cycle from the state was unprecedentedly late. It was the slowest reimbursement of the state's appropriation history. And so we started some measures as a response to this early warning. In the late fall of 2008, we set aside $18.6 million, which was essentially taken back by the state as a decision. This had its consequences because this basically was money that was going to cover university reserves and facility and renovation funds. So this started, this added to our increasing deferred maintenance issues. And so we headed into July 2009 when we received an appropriation of $743 million, which was equivalent to the FY 2009 appropriation. This is for the FY 2010 budget when we started in July. We were, however, a little skeptical about the state's ability to pay on time. We started by doing some conservative spending. We held back another $19.8 million. Again, this is money that's normally held for reserve purposes and for facility and renovation purposes. And we again held this back, hoping that that would prevent the bleed. The other thing we started doing was we did not fill some vacant positions across the campus, including at university administration. A very key position of an executive VP opened up. We decided not to fill that. We did appropriate reallocation and reappointment of individuals. And on a campus-wide, a university-wide level, we put in an interim furlough plan into place so that we could introduce appropriate language into the appointment notices with the hope, and really the hope, that we'd never have to implement this plan, but we had to put it into our notices of appointment. However, by October 31st, the cash crisis started to emerge. At that point, we had an unreimbursed amount from the state of $258 million. As a matter of fact, for the FY 2010 budget, we had received, I believe, by October 31st, only $200,000. As Walt mentioned to you, September 16th was when we received the FY 09 arrears, and in October, we were in fairly dire financial straits as the picture looked as we looked forward. Therefore, in November 2009, at that time, Interim President Eikenberry and President White sent a university-wide letter saying that asking the units to hold back 6% of their planned expenditures so that they were thinking about there may be a 6% reduction of state funds, and they asked units to start planning for this. They urged units to also undergo a hiring slowdown, even more than what we had done in July. And at the same time, they decided that we would still wait to see whether the state was going to make its payments and announced there were no immediate current personnel, no immediate plans for cost cuts for current personnel on the campuses. The tipping point, however, was in December, on December 31st, when an unreimbursed was $436 million. And as Walt showed you in an earlier slide, we had received only $46 million at that point in time. So we decided to deal with our sick patient by an intervention process and responded to the escalating crisis with an intervention process. President Eikenberry sent out a letter with the approval of the chancellors to the campus community on January 5th, where he asked units to return 6% or $45 million, the 6% they were asked to set aside, we now are going to try and recover in terms of at central funds, and this will give us about $45 million. President Eikenberry also asked for a hiring freeze, an absolute hiring freeze, but as you all know, with a complex organization like we have with over 29,000 employees and therefore that many number of positions, we have to allow for certain exemptions. But now the exemptions are going to become much more difficult, and they're going to be reviewed on a case-by-case basis in the campuses by the chancellors, who will report these exemptions to the president and UA by President Eikenberry. Then the most difficult thing we had to do was to announce a personnel cost reduction program for faculty and academic professionals, which will garner us about $17 million. This is a temporary program. We've tried to orchestrate it with maximum amount of flexibility to the individuals affected. It's going to be a graded furlough program, 10 days for senior administrators and 4 days for others who are not exempted. There is a list of individuals who are not exempted, any academic professional or faculty making less than $30,000. There is a floor for this. And as well as we've tried to be understanding of our faculty and academic professionals who are already had made arrangements to retire as of August 15th. People who are 100% soft money grant funded are also exempt. Graduate students are exempt. And we have a whole list that's posted on a website. The implementation of this, we've been very cognizant of the necessary labor laws in which to implement a graded furlough program. We started receiving feedback both from our faculty as well as from academic professionals, and because of certain exceptions that we needed to make because of the time and work restrictions imposed by the labor laws, we also announced yesterday that everybody who is eligible for the furlough program has an option of either taking furloughs or taking a voluntary pay reduction option in lieu of furloughs. For example, some of our physicians have expressed an interest that they would not want to go through this time reporting mechanism and they'd much rather just take a voluntary pay reduction. So we've tried to make this even more flexible as a consequence. The letter from President Eikenberry also stated that we need to plan ahead for FY 2011. All these are temporary measures. At best, it's just an immediate intervention mechanism. As you heard very eloquently from Craig Bazzani, there is an administrative, university-wide administrative review process underway. And the academic enterprises in the three campuses, the dean's councils, the task forces led by the provost in the three campuses, are also looking at academic program and programmatic reviews. We've also requested the units to look at the issuance of select notices of non-reappointment towards reducing our personnel workforce in answer to this escalating problem from the state. So moving forward, what is our biggest challenge? It's kind of a nice challenge to work with in that our workforce are really our biggest asset. But over 85% of the general revenue fund are in personnel-related costs. However, at the same time, the challenge is that the demand for our work product, unlike that out in the private sector in the industry, is that our demand for work product, namely education and a high-quality education, accessible education, is increasing. For the first time, our enrollment has reached 75,000. So the demand for our universities has not diminished. As we look at FY 2011 and beyond, The administrative and programmatic review that I spoke about in the previous slide are going to lead to administrative and programmatic restructuring. The programmatic restructuring will have to occur at the level of the units, of the colleges, of the provost, and obviously with input from the faculty and student input. We need to plan for additional potential reductions in state support. The units, again, have been asked to think about this going into FY 2011 and beyond. And we have to look at personnel cost reductions, again, looking to, as I mentioned to you, the issuance of notices of non-reappointment and other mechanisms whereby we can streamline our services. As a result of all of this, our other costs, like deferred maintenance, which is very often our reserve costs, will continue to escalate, which will continue to add to the problem of creating a safe and a safe and conducive environment to do top quality research. However, no amount of cuts or reallocations can make up for the $745 million and stave off the problems at the heart of our mission, and that's excellence in higher education. And I'd like to end by quoting Dr. Elizabeth Dorsey, a faculty member colleague who is an associate professor in emergency medicine, who wrote a very eloquent letter to the editor, in yesterday's newspaper. And in emergency room parlance, we cannot wait till the patient dies and gets cold. We need to intervene now. Intervention is much easier to do than resuscitation. So we appeal to the state to help us with our cash flow problem. Thank you.
Very good. Any questions or further comments? Yes, ma'am.
I just wanted to confirm that you said 75,000 student enrollments now.
Any further questions? All right. Any comments from the president or from the table, from the chair?
Well, I think the only comment I would like to add, one acknowledgement and one thank you. The acknowledgement is the help and good counsel we received from the faculty and other groups as we went about making this decision. We had some initial conversations before the holiday break, not optimistic at that time that we were going to get our customary Christmas bonus from Springfield. And so we had some preliminary conversations at that time. And then subsequent to that time, we continued to be in a good conversation. I think that's been immensely helpful to the to me personally and to others as we've worked our way through this. The second thing I think I'd like to say at this point is that I personally am grateful for the calm and understanding way in which members of the university community have been willing to receive these kinds of tough decisions. It's not an easy thing to do, to basically ask all members of the university community first thing out of the box to take what in effect is a pay reduction, and to undergo a lot of other stress as was contained in our overall message. The feedback I've received on that, the emails, the phone calls, the casual conversations, in almost every instance have been remarkably understanding and very supportive. And I think all of us who were involved with that ought to acknowledge that good spirit and express our appreciation for it.
Very good. Thank you, sir. Any other questions for that? No, welcome back, Walt, to the podium for one last report. I don't know which one.
I can't believe we're letting him speak again.
He had to take a break just to breathe.
Don't let him hurt your feelings, Walt.
I'll
I'll do it for, from here because I didn't bring my night vision goggles.
Touché, touché.